Argus, as you enter the storm, the first thing you notice is that you're still alive and holding your grandfather Jasper's hand. The second thing you notice is that the only thing stopping the weight of the storm from crushing down on you is a small translucent blue aura around you. The pressure builds, but Jasper presses on without hesitation, guiding you almost as if looking for something specific. After a minute, you see a short and stout outline in the distance, and Jasper pulls you in that direction. For just the briefest of moments, you catch the eye of this man who seems familiar but unknown to you and not much older than yourself. This man has a desperate look in his eyes and is clearly struggling against the storm, but your grandfather tightens his grip and pulls you past him, and the man quickly vanishes from your view. Not more than a moment or two later, you step out of the storm, and you feel something akin to when your consciousness first connected with your future self, but that feeling is outside of you instead of within. As you look around you, you're standing at the peak of a geological shield, a large area of exposed rock overlooking a grassy landscape. In one direction, the sun crests the horizon, sunrise or sunset, you're not sure which. And in the other, as you look away from this breathtaking view towards the sound of voices behind you, you turn to see two young men who are camping. There are two small tents beyond them, and a fire is going between the two of them as they relax on small cushions and have some sort of foldable grill over the flame with a pot sitting on top, which one of them stirs. The one stirring is a lanky blonde white man who looks to be in his mid-20s with freckles decorating his cheeks and a loose red sweater and comfortable plain gray pants, which he shoved his free hand into. The other one you recognize. This is the man you just passed a moment ago. He's a stout man leaning back on his hands, looking in your direction, but seeing through you to the landscape beyond. His hands are large and calloused. He wears a similarly simple sweater and pants, and his long, dark hair hangs down almost to the ground in a ponytail. You see a playful smirk on that familiar broad face as he speaks with a gruff voice. "Don't tell me you're chickening out now." The blonde one responds in a softer voice. "You know me better than that, you twat. Sure, I'm scared, but I'm always scared before the chase. Fear is what keeps me going. And you'd do well to keep a bit more on edge, honestly. You're too relaxed about this. Tomorrow isn't going to be like last month if my predictions are correct." And the two of them say in unison, which they always are. "It's not like I don't believe you, Loot. Your predictions are uncanny, and especially useful in like that piece of junk," which he points his thumb over his shoulder at. It's some sort of technology, like an older, smaller version of something from Tiffany's lab. "Nah, I just don't believe there's a storm out there we couldn't take on together, so why not leave the worrying to you? And shit, things go sideways, I know you've got my back." "That's what scares me. Things feel like they're separating, like the world is using a sieve and there's no guarantee of us making it through. I don't understand how I know the things I know or feel the things I do. And that terrifies me, Jasper. What if I'll never feel normal again? What if this is forever? People will think I'm some sort of freak. I'll be shunned or hated or I don't know, left behind. I don't want to lose the only community I've ever known, but the longer I hide this, the further I feel from everyone." And Loot flinches as a wadded up sock hits him in the face. "What the fuck, man? You're not getting rid of me, and I sure as hell won't let anyone do anything to you just because, what? You can turn into some fairy tale hero. You're so full of yourself, Looty Tootie. Besides, all those flashy moves of yours, and you still haven't beaten my record." Loot chuckles a little, more at ease, and says, "Yeah, well, I'll catch up one day, man, and thanks." "Hey, I can't very well eat thanks. You've been stirring that damn thing forever. Dish it out already. I'm starving." Your grandfather watches this scene, and you see a distant look in his eyes and a smile that doesn't quite reach them. He looks at you without saying anything and squeezes your hand. Argus, do you do or say anything?
He just wants to listen as much as he can, because this is the first time he's hearing his grandfather speak. I think he's just rapt, holding his hand and looking on.
He squeezes your hand, and as he does so, thunder rumbles in the distance, and the storm begins to envelop the both of you once again, leaving this scene behind. First, lute fades out of the scene, leaving young Jasper alone for a moment before he too fades out with his surroundings.
As it fades out, he'd probably say, you know, wait or something. You know, he'd be reaching out, trying to stay there.
And as it falls out of your grasp, as the thunder gets more and more intense, you begin to make out a vastly different landscape appearing in front of you. You see a snow-covered tundra and can partially make out the outline of mountains in the distance through the heavy snowfall. At first, it seems like there's nothing here, but as you look around, you see a sparkle of light flash in the distance, followed by more, as city lights are repeatedly eclipsed by the raging storm. This storm stretches in all directions, not unlike the one you had just walked into in Fine Zaun, except here, there is no protective shield around the city. You start to see the same translucent overlays barely perceptible from this distance outside the city perimeter, except this time, they're snapping into existence, causing explosions, and you see the entirety of the city begin to destroy itself as matter superimposes itself and implodes. You see a beam of light shoot skyward in the middle of the city, piercing the clouds above and shining brighter than the white landscape around you. The beam concentrates with a particularly brighter spot rising up the beam until it is far above the city at the heart of the storm. And all at once, that ball expands outward at an incredible speed, past the city limits, past you, and then far into the distance only a moment after. With it, all of a sudden the storm and that bright light is gone. The landscape is much clearer now. In the distance, you see the remains of what was once a city, but where only ruins lay now. You see from where the epicenter of the explosion was, something falls, plummeting to the ground. Everything is quiet for a few moments, and then it seems like time speeds up. Night falls, then morning, and night, and morning, and night. And on the third morning, the sun hangs still in the sky once again, and you hear a rhythmic noise growing louder from the horizon, which turns into the sound of 1,000 footfalls in unison, damped by the snow. From that direction, you soon see soldiers marching and a few people on the backs of horse-like animals galloping forward. As the city comes into view for them, the uniform footfalls become more discordant and the cavalry officers ride ahead at full speed as banners of the synergic precincts are lowered by the foot soldiers carrying them. It takes a while and you have more than enough time to walk towards what is left of the city. Do you and your grandfather follow them or remain where you are?
I guess Argos isn't sure if Jasper's going to respond to him, but he starts to, you know, like almost gravitationally start to walk forwards to it. But he's saying just out loud, like, has this already happened? Is this going to happen? What is, and he's asking questions and just like going forward. Yeah.
We know that Jasper can't communicate, so these questions go unanswered. You walk towards the remains of the city, and after some time, an officer returns holding the body of a frail-looking child, no older than 14 or 15, unconscious and clearly starving on the brink of death, but still breathing. The officer walks up to a woman who's clearly in charge and says, Sir, we found two children in a small area near the center of town that looked... Well, there's no other way of describing it. It looked untouched compared to its surroundings. The woman in charge says, Where is the other child? Are there any adult survivors? There's a long pause before the officer says, There was only one survivor. The woman nods and the camera zooms to a close-up of a grim look on her face and she says, Reinhold won't be happy. The camera zooms out, now in a room filled with toggles, dials, screens, and the background buzzing noise that accompanies these things. People in the background work on various tasks with these machines, but near the center is a large table with a map of the continent laid out with pins outlining a route from the Terrenial Major Precinct in the center to the Minon Precinct in the lower right corner. On one side of the table stands the woman who is in charge, looking worried. Across from her is a younger but recognizable Reinhold, with his arms splayed apart and his head hanging so his face is obscured. Almost inaudibly, you hear him say, Destroy the evidence. The woman's surprise says, "But, sir." And in a roar, Reinhold straightens and repeats himself,
"Destroy it!"
The scene shakes and races away as if propelled by the force of Reinhold's yell, leaving you in a large office with a single desk and a chair behind it. Cabinets and paperwork line the perimeter of the room as well as on the desk, which has a black liquid dripping down the side of it. An inkwell has been knocked over and a pen has been left in a rush on a half-finished letter. A few words catch your eye, such as Minon and Storm, but before you can fully read it, the door creaks open. At first, it appears to have been nothing, but then, behind the desk, Ida appears, wearing an unusual outfit. Ida's entire body, up to her neck, is covered in an almost jet-black bodysuit, and she has what looks like iron rings around her neck and arms with glowing chains connecting them, but the thing you are most familiar with is the aura that surrounds her. Different from yours, but that of someone who is transcended. Before you can even finish processing, the scene changes to the underground ruins of Fainzon, much deeper than you have yet to explore. Down a set of stairs walks Quill, Nissa, and another person from your community named Rhonda or Ron. Nissa and Ron have worried looks on their faces while Quill smiles. In his arms, he holds Ida in her regular outfit, loose hoodie and tight pants, but unconscious, arms bound, and wearing a blindfold. Nissa fades from the scene first, before the rest of the scene also swirls back into the chaos of the storm around you, and you are left standing there with your grandfather, still holding his hand, his firm grasp never once wavering. He now looks at you within the small barrier the two of you share. What do you do?
Just imagine him screaming as they're transferring from scene to scene. Well. I think he looks directly at his grandfather and says, like, did you show this to me on purpose? Is there something I need to do? Where are we? Should we go back? Is Ida in trouble?
You ask these questions, but your grandfather can simply look at you, and regardless of what he tries to do, the conveying of an answer is still unclear.
Yeah. Oh God. I guess he'll. Oh. Just getting like even some of him speaking is so and expressing himself like that in that memory was so
frustratingly brief.
Frustratingly brief, and now he has a million more questions.
Mm-hmm.
And if anything, he's just thankful he still has him with him, and he has brought him here. He squeezes his hand and he says, "Thank you. You know, I want to go back now. Will you come with me?"
You're not sure whether he understands or not, but as you lead the way, he follows you. And as if it's nothing, you emerge back from the storm. However, I don't know when you emerge. So we're going to jump over to Ida and Anya.
Okay.
You mean Tiffany and Anya?
Sorry, we're going to jump over to Tiffany and Anya. What are the two of you up to?
This is a very good question. I was asked to leave my two friends in the med bay, and mm-hmm. I'd already spoken to Ida. Well, let's take a look at what I can do for downtime actions, because that might help mm-hmm. clarify.
As a reminder, Argus has one, Anya has one, and you have two downtime actions, plus each of you have trauma bonding. If you're not sure, maybe Anya has something?
Yeah. Anya, do you have something?
Maybe Anya has something.
Cool.
No, I don't have something off the top of my head.
Here's the thing. Like, I need to work on a long-term project, and we need to investigate. Mm-hmm. So these are both things that need to happen mechanically. You still have an injury, right? You still have harm?
You still have the harm. You have not fully... Yeah.
Can we do help a friend recover more than once in a single downtime?
I don't think there's anything against it.
I feel like getting rid of that harm is probably the highest priority. So I could help with the harm further, help with and recover even more. It means other people will have to do investigation stuff.
I'm just disoriented, that's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just disoriented, that's the default, right? So
mechanically, having level 1 harm is less bad than any other harm. It's still not good.
Yeah, but it's less bad, right? How bad could less bad be? When have we ever made decisions that downplayed how dangerous the situation was until it blew up in our faces?
So level 1 harm decreases the effect of literally every roll you make.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think that's worth mitigating. I think that's okay. More important than a single roll of investigation.
Okay. Well, agree to disagree.
Okay, so what are y'all doing?
What are
the characters doing?
So I think I'm going to try and find Anya to check in on the injury and with the mechanical intent of helping further, though Tiffany doesn't yet know for sure that that's necessary. So I'm going to look for Anya probably after like an hour from when I headed out.
I think you find Anya near the barrier, looking out.
Near the barrier. Which barrier?
Where the storm is.
Gotcha, gotcha. Well, I will walk up to Anya and start inconspicuously checking for your injury. Inconspicuous as in Tiffany thinks she's being inconspicuous, not that she actually is.
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing here?
Hey, Tiffany. Sorry, everything's a little off. I wasn't sure if it was me or this place or that. And Anya points at the storm raging outside.
Okay. Why would it be that?
Why would it be the chaos out there?
Well, it's been there for a bit of time now. Has it been feeling this way since it started?
I don't know. Something's just...
I think it's probably best that you rest a little bit more now, okay?
Maybe you're right.
The med bay, the readout said you had a bit of a concussion. So
I guess that would explain it, wouldn't it?
Maybe. I don't know. We don't really understand the storms, and we really don't understand how you and Argus are apparently magic. But I do know that a concussion is something to look after.
Are you?
Am I?
It's funny to have you be checking on me.
Is it?
I know you care. It's just... Maybe you're right. Maybe I just need to lay down and let whatever's clamoring in my head settle down. But thank you for checking in.
You're welcome. Thanks for always having my back. I guess.
Speaking
I feel a little...
of, I couldn't help but notice you seem more sure lately. It's nice to see.
Oh, I feel like I'm faking it most of the time. Not real confidence, just what people need to see. I feel like I'm a little in over my head, but I'm doing my best. And so far it's working.
I mean, you know, fake it till you make it, right? But truly, Tippy, it's good to see you coming into your own.
Is that what I'm doing?
Mean, don't get me wrong, when you came back, you were kind of like a baby deer. You seem like you've got some confidence to you now. I'm proud of you.
Thank you. Thanks. Let's get you back and find you a spot to lie down.
Okay.
I don't want anything happening to you or Argus. Anything bad.
I'll be okay, but yeah.
And yeah, Tiffany will bring Anya back and find him a bed and settle in and sit with them until sleep comes, I think.
Sounds like an empathize role.
I have one of those, but I literally cannot fail this, so.
Yeah, you literally can't. Well, you literally can't.
Thank goodness for that, because that's a one. So far, so Tiffany.
You did get a one, but I mean, that's one.
That's two.
Actually, it's two, but
there's only one left.
It doesn't
so.
Roll over, yeah. Clear the harm and empty that clock out, Anya.
Speaking of clocks, did I do my clock for the clock with Grandpa J.O. already? Am I only
Yeah, you
at?
Got three, mm-hmm. three more and you're up to six out of 12.
Oh, okay. Just checking. Thank you for...
You just want more? You can do it again. You have another downtime action.
That'd be so fun. Nothing else. Nothing else for me.
Just hanging out in that storm for a while longer.
Okay. Thank you for confirming. We can continue.
Yeah. Argus is still not back, by the way. I'll let you know when you're back, Argus.
Thank you.
But you just stepped into the weird fucking time storm, so...
I'm chilling.
Yeah, I figure since I just did it... I mean, we were both present for it, but since I just initiated a thing, I was going to give Anya the next chance.
How long... is Argus going to be in that storm for?
You don't know. You don't even know where Argus is.
I was going to say, just in terms of, like, framing, but then I guess a time storm, asking how long, you know, there's some dubiousness there. I think at some point, either before or after, Anya is back at that barrier trying to investigate by attuning themselves with the storm outside and trying to almost see through all the different chaotic notes and waves, like listening and separating out different tracks and different input channels to gain a picture of if there is anything to gleam from within the storm.
So you want to use a tune?
Mm-hmm.
That's not a move in this game. Sorry. It's a different game. You want to use...
I want to use maybe perceive, maybe flow. I could also see empathize, although it's not with a living creature. But I think...
Yeah, the way you described it sounds like you're almost like meditating, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is the vibe... I mean, you literally said look past the surface, which is analyze.
Mm-hmm. I'm here for it. I'm here to analyze.
What are you attempting to do in terms of the downtime actions?
Investigation,
gotcha.
I think Anya's trying to figure out, like, why the storm is here and not moving and not dissipating, but, like,
mm-hmm.
locked in
this location.
We can
say it's been, like, a few days at this point.
Yeah. At this point, a little suspicious, you know?
Yeah, it would be. This is weird.
So I think that's what she's using her harmonic inclinations to suss out.
Okay, well, that's, you know, that's a three. So that is, it's a three and a six, but you have zero, so it's a three. So I'm going to take two on the investigation tier. Mm-hmm. And you get to ask one of your questions from your character sheet.
How are X and Y connected? How is the storm and this location connected? I think what she's trying to figure out is it being kept here or is it being caused here?
Paint me a picture. Like, are you like closing your eyes, crossing your legs? Are you floating? Like, are you transcended in this moment? Just like flavor wise, what are we seeing?
I think Anya extends their hands forwards and closes their eyes, and it's almost as if there's like wisps of thread that they're submerging their hands into, just whipping around. There are moments of stability, there are different energies of life and of place, and there's that chaos outside as they push deeper into the storm itself, and they're just sort of feeling it rush around their hands as if a torrent of water, shoving his hands into a quick running stream, but each aspect of the stream is threads as she closes her eyes and almost begins to grasp at them. It's seeing what is more substantial. Where is, what is smoke and what is yarn? What's being perceived is intent, something that feels like it's flowing with purpose, and almost fishing out different threads with fingers. They're holding pictures, feelings, thoughts that slip through, but trying to find something that feels causal. Very much like music as a flowing font. Music as notes and harmonies and syncopations, and I think they're just trying to attune. As they do so, their outline distorts slightly. It almost feels as though there's a conduit to the world, filtering through everything as it rushes in and back out, only held for a second before continuing on.
As you're closing your eyes and picturing this in your mind's eye, these threads of harmony and light coming through you, out of you, and past you, you are also having this feeling almost like someone is, or like an extra force is adding something to this scene. You are visualizing as if the storm is mirroring these threads, reaching through the barrier. You're imagining this happening, reaching for yours and about to connect. And as this is happening, you have this like warm feeling on your chest, and you feel, and like the threads are getting closer and your chest is getting warmer and warmer until you realize it's not just a feeling. Your chest is actually something is burning you. And right as the threads touch, you feel something on your hand and you hear a voice go, "Anyi, what are you doing?" And UV snaps you out of your trance. You open your eyes and like you're just standing there, and you look down, and the pendant that you were wearing, that is the device that Argus gave you, mm-hmm. is like has left like a burn on your chest.
UV?
Hi. Why are you out here?
Oh. Hey. Just admiring. Just thinking.
What are you thinking about?
Well, I'm thinking about us and that mess out there and how lucky we are to be safe in here.
You know how much longer we're going to be in here?
Well, that's a good question. I'm doing my job and I'm trying to figure it out. Don't you worry, okay? Well, sort of.
Are you worried?
Am I worried? I think Anya takes a moment and reflects. I don't know if it's worried, but I'm confident we'll find a way through it.
Then I'll be confident too.
They sort of puff their chest out a little bit, hand like fists on their hips, and, you know, look at you smiling.
Anya immediately grabs them by the cheeks and like, hell yes. UV, you're the sun on the other side of the storm.
They sort of like do like a little fake like punching the air, like doo 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 doo, and like little kick, and like, yeah, I'm gonna beat that storm up. Watch out, here comes my sun rays. And they like blat, they like hold their hand out as if they're like shooting a beam. Nothing happens, they're just, you know.
Mm-hmm. Let's, oh, I'm so hungry. I'm sorry. Let's go eat something, huh? Let's go get a snack. What do you say?
Yeah, okay.
All right. And Anya takes...
Do you feel like that answered your question?
Somewhat, yes.
Somewhat? Do you want to tell me what you think I answered, and I can, like, confirm if you got what I was saying?
that the same connection between the amulet and how it works to the storm is what's triggering it and what's anchoring it into place.
Okay, I think you got what I was conveying. I'm neither going to confirm or deny specific aspects because you don't get follow-up questions, but I just want to make sure my ambiguous response was I was conveying what I did want to do, which was the direct answer.
Mm-hmm. What's the connection between the location of the storm? That amulet.
Exactly. Argus, I think it's still a few more days late. Like, I think it's been a week. You're not back.
Whoa. Woof. Well, before that happens, I will do my long-term project.
Please do.
Yeah.
Like, probably the next day before I realize that Argus is, like, fully missing. Because I think mm-hmm. once that happens, there is nothing Tiffany is focusing on other than finding Argus.
Okay. So, all right. So what are you doing?
I am going to work on my device to try and figure out what's up with the storms, because now we're going to get so much data from a storm right now if I can just finish this device to get data from a storm.
Mm-hmm. Are you going to, like, work in the lab with Gish and Ida?
Absolutely.
Okay. So, like, Ida's just doing her project. Gish is doing their own thing. There's some flirting going on between, at least from Ida's side. I don't know how Tiffany's feeling about everything, but, you know, as you're just working in the same area, you get glances with, like, a smile and, like, blushes just as you're doing this work. What is Tiffany doing? Paint me, like, what role will you be doing? Like,
I mean, it'll be pure analyze is the objective. Like, it's going to be looking at the data that we have, looking at the pieces, figuring out exactly how to make this device operate the way that we need it to, potentially altering some of the original plans to better suit the current situation. It is pure analysis, study and design, essentially.
All right, so this is, like, focused on one thing, not so much paying attention to, like, the surroundings, I'm getting the sense, like...
Yeah, I mean, not ignoring them, but...
Yeah, but you're not, like, connecting, like, you're not doing, like, an empathize, for example. Like, this isn't connecting with the people around you, this is focusing on the project.
Yeah, absolutely. This is... If other people are, you know, able and willing to help, she's not going to turn it down, but it's very much... You know, trying to figure out what's needed to dig deeper and perhaps get some actually useful information about storms generally and this storm in particular.
Well, let's see that roll.
Okay. That's a 6.
There we go.
I needed a
all right,
three
so that's
or higher.
4. So you complete the device. So what does it look like when you complete this device?
It's probably going to be a number of sensors. Here's the thing. I am neither a meteorologist nor someone who understands anything about the magic of this world. So I think Tiffany can do a much better job of designing this than I can. But I think there are probably a bunch of small sensors that are connected through very long, thin wires. Yeah, okay. Never mind. I'm having thoughts. So I think there are some sensors that are connected by wires and some sensors that are not. And so, like they're paired, and the idea is, or maybe it's one sensor, but it has both the capacity to send a signal directly through a wire and also send a signal back through radio waves. And so you can get from the exact same place an unaltered and an altered signal.
Mm.
Hell yeah.
Using that data from a few different places in the storm can start to actually get some practical data on what the distortions are and maybe learning a little bit more about kind of the underlying nature of the storm.
Let's treat this, at least at the beginning, as sort of like a gather information, because it does sound kind of like what you're doing, but like a fully, like at least a crit gather information. You know what I mean? And we can go from there. That doesn't have to be the end of it.
Okay, so on a crit, I get 2 questions, a follow-up, and then also something more, improved effect, additional questions, or volunteered information. So, cool. My gather information questions are not ones that apply very strongly to storms.
because this isn't actually gather information, right?
Yeah, I can ask different questions.
Yeah.
That's good, because I don't think who here is strong or vulnerable is exactly the kind of question I'm looking to answer with this device. I mean, the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to set it all up and start collecting data. I think the first thing that, that Tiffany's really trying to answer is, what makes some storms different from others? Like, there are storms that have this effect, and these are like the capital S storms, but presumably that's not every single weather phenomenon. I think we established that early on.
Mm-hmm.
So what is it in these particular storms that is different? What leads them to have this effect?
Interesting. And are you like sending a probe into the storm basically and like measuring it? Like, what is the visual of this?
Yeah, so sending probes in, the probes probably have a whole bunch of different instruments on them to detect like pressure, wind speeds, particulate matter, radio signals. And then all of that information is transmitted both along the wire and wirelessly back to the receiver.
Mm-hmm. There's probably like this mixture of like technology from Sonaru, but also this Aphonian technology that's like, you know, you were working on the ship and you had access to like talking to Gish and whatnot and maybe suggestions. So I do think you could even have like, it's almost like you have a little drone that you can send into the storm and it's like maybe wired, but also wireless.
Yeah, like it would definitely have to be tethered in some way because it's going into a storm.
Yeah.
and we don't want to just go away forever.
Yeah. And you want to know how this is different from like a normal storm, like just a rain storm.
Yeah, exactly. Like what is it that makes these particular capital S storms different from just, you know, a bit of wind or some rain? Like why do some storms, and often the most severe ones, have this effect on communication? Like, what's the connection to all the other weird things that we're seeing? This is the sort of stuff I'm trying to find answers to.
So things you would know as like a meteorologist is like how pressure systems work with storms. A normal storm, you have warm air moving into cold areas and whatnot. And as like the pressure changes at different levels of the atmosphere, you know, water collects and moves. And it's this almost this filling of space, this energy moving towards entropy. It's this creation of fronts almost that are moving, pressing against each other. The thing that this device is picking up on is this emptiness. It's almost like there is a lack of something around. And as you are picking this up outside in the storm, it's almost like it's filling. It's moving in. It's crashing. It's this front, but it's not physical. It is temporal. So as communication tries to move through this weather front, it is changing not only like the way it's moving, but almost the direction of time, but not only it moving through time, but time moving through it. Things coming both from here and through here. Here moving through other places. The storm is the result of filling an empty void. And if you take measurements from inside, you can still feel that void inside the barrier. There's this almost lack of something, this lack of time. You're not sure how to even quantify this, but because you have these resources of the ship and potentially even the barrier around the ship, there is this feeling that what the barrier is doing is almost constructing a safe sort of filling of this void. It's somehow using itself to make itself to fill the hole. There's this in, like, and I don't know what sensors you've created that are measuring this, but it's almost like what you've done is you've inverted a hole so that instead of nothingness, you have somethingness, and you've used that somethingness so that the storm is not moving towards this empty void. You've filled this void. I don't know if that, like, sort of gives you enough for that first question.
Yeah, so just to make sure that I'm understanding and to put it in different terms, there is an absence of some kind of metaphysical energy or power that is temporally, like, connected to temporality and time, that there is a deficit of in this environment. For some reason, gee, I wonder what it could possibly be. But possibly it gets consumed when people fuck with time. Anyway, that's speculation at this point. The important thing is there is this absence of an energy, a power that is connected to temporality, and the storm is essentially like temporal pressure rushing to fill it. And the reason that the barrier works is,
well,
it sort of provides that.
I will say the temporal pressure is interesting because you know how, like, you can think of space as, like, it has more than one dimension. You almost, you feel that, like, it's not just temporal pressure from one dimension. It's almost this, like, spectrum of dimensions, this almost tree-like dimension, where it's like dimensions are creating dimensions that are creating dimensions, and it's like these things crashing into each other, passing through each other. So it is that, but it's almost more complex.
This is all very conceptual. I'm trying to understand what measuring this means.
Yes, that's fair.
So I'm trying to figure out exactly what information my character had. Like, what does Tiffany actually have is what I'm trying to parse from this very conceptual outline.
You know, I'll just say straight up, you completed a long-term project. You asked this question. Tiffany, I think you conclude that there are alternate timelines, definitively alternate timelines that this storm can move through.
Interesting. Okay. So the storm exists in multiple realities at once.
Yes and no. Like, it's almost like it's taking these multiple realities and superimposing them.
Okay, so it is a thinning of the barrier between timelines, as well as a crushing force of temporal pressure.
I think for the sake of, like, thinking about it, thinning is good, but, like, I think what, like, Tiffany, as, like, the specialist here, and what the conceptual feeling of it is, it's not this thinning, it's this moving. It's like, it's not that something is breaking down, it's that something is being moved.
Okay. Yeah. So,
in, like, fundamentally, way, like,
if we reduce, you know, all of space, like, space-time down to, like, two-dimensional lines in a three-dimensional space, the disparate timelines are being moved closer to the coordinate that we are in. The branching things are being bundled together.
I think that is a more accurate way to think about it than breaking down barrier. Yes.
Okay.
Again, this is, like, time physics and whatnot. So, like,
my quantum mechanics knowledge is limited.
Yeah, that's fair. Like, as far as what we, the audience, need to care about, yes. Tiffany understands maybe we definitely better than we do.
Gotcha. Okay.
And the thing you conclude is there are multiple timelines that there is movement between.
And, okay, I just had somebody tell me, hey, there are devices that can fuck with time. And that's apparent. Did I hear from Argus that was what the device did? What that device did?
Yes.
Yes, okay. Because I remember Ida talking about
right?
Stopped time specifically yeah, is so, what
yeah.
You know, the one said, stopped yeah. time, and we know that Ida is working on something to move through or reverse time. Okay. So based on that knowledge and the knowledge that... Okay, so it's pretty reasonable to conclude that this storm was probably specifically caused by the watch, the amulet, or at least significantly caused by it. Because... It's not like every, like, these storms are not super uncommon, right? Like, they happen, and they're not new phenomena, right? Like, these didn't just start happening, you know, because Jasper no. has been affected a long time ago. So, there mm-hmm. is an amount of temporal fuckery that seems to happen naturally, irrespective of human intervention. Though, perhaps what we're getting right now is a worsening of the storms in their severity and frequency because of human intervention, because oops, climate change metaphors. Am I getting, like, are these reasonable lines to be drawing?
These are things that Tiffany can believe, absolutely.
Yeah, there's nothing in her data that contradicts this, and there is at least circumstantial evidence to support it. I'm not just coming up with this stuff out of nowhere.
Yeah, as far as Tiffany can conclude from these sensors, I think that is a decent conclusion. Yeah.
Cool. Okay. So, oh no, I'm going to have to tell Ida, maybe we shouldn't.
Do you have another question?
Oh, I'm going to. I'm sure going to. I'm just processing the first one. Because that was big, that was a lot.